Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
With Renault's award-winning hybrid and full electric lineup, where style meets tech. Rethink Renault.
This is News Talk.
Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up over the next hour, we'll hear from the former CIO at the HSC to hear why he's calling on health leaders to be courageous. We'll look back at what the Oireachtas Media Committee heard from Big Tech and indeed why X wasn't in attendance. Plus, I'll answer your tech questions. If you want to get in touch, you can do so right now. Drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com or you'll find me on Instagram at JessKellyNT. You are most welcome. If this is your first time hearing the show, come on in. This is where, yes, there's a bit of nerdiness, but we also look at how, when, why, and where technology is infiltrating our day-to-day lives, what you need to be aware of, and most importantly, why you should care. I have been News Talk's technology correspondent for a decade next month, which is wild. I'm still processing that fact. But it got me thinking about the stories I've covered over the last 10 years. And there are certain trends and issues and topics that have come up time and again. The National Broadband Plan is obviously a huge one, and we will be coming back to that. But also the theme of technology and health has arisen. From the latest Fitbits and Whoops and wearable reviews, right up to digital e-health records, how transformational they could be, small, medium companies in this country developing solutions to help keep well people well for longer. It's definitely a space where there is a massive potential for not only innovation, but transformation as well. But there's one stat that keeps coming back into my brain time and again when I think about this issue. And it's one that I learned in an interview back in 2022. And that is, in 2022, the HSE budget was 21 billion euro. And we, in 2022, were spending 0.024% of that on digital transformation, which equated to around 5 million. And my first guest today was the man who told me that stat, but also said that if we were to transform the HSE using digital technologies, we could add 2.5 years of quality life to everyone in Ireland every 5 years. Think about that for a second. I'm delighted to say that Professor Martin Curley, who is a professor of innovation at Maynooth University, is with me now. Can you just start by setting the scene and telling us a little bit about your background and how you came to be the CIO at the HSE?
Brilliant, Jess, and thanks for having me on, and congratulations on moving to this primetime slot.
Thank you.
It's great. You're going to be have a much an even bigger audience. So I'm Martin Curley. I'm now a professor of innovation at Maynooth University. I'm an electronic engineer. I had the privilege of working with some great companies around the world, Philips, General Electric, Intel, MasterCard, and then I moved to the HSE, initially as the CIO and then as director of digital transformation and open innovation. And since about 3 years, I'm a full-time academic in Maynooth University. About 20 years ago, I got involved with the then president, and we co-founded an institute called the Innovation Value Institute. We'll have our 20th anniversary this year, and we're all about bringing the value of digital technology to all of society. And when I joined the HSE, I really had the ambition. I saw the opportunity of taking technology, and particularly digital technology, and transforming our health systems. And I think we should all be really grateful that we live now and not 200 years ago, because life expectancy is more than double. And quality of life is getting better. But we actually have to face the reality that our health systems are really struggling, almost to the point of a future collapse, because we are living longer. But chronic disease, and there's been a big shift in the last 100 years, where in the past, what we called maybe contagious or communicable disease were actually what caused most of the issues. But now chronic diseases are the issue. And I saw, initially I went in as the CIO, but I quickly realized it was a much bigger opportunity. I did think it was going to be very difficult to transform the IT function in the HSE. Now, that is the largest sort of, you know, computing footprint in the company. But one of the things that I developed in the Innovation Value Institute was something called the IT Capability Maturity Framework. And that has been used all over the world. More than 800 organizations have used it, from large tech companies to petroleum companies, et cetera. And we did that assessment with the HSE, and it showed there were actually quite a few challenges. But I'd written a book. I'd had the privilege of chairing a European Commission high-level group called the OISBG, Open Innovation Strategy Policy Group. And we'd done 10 years of research, many, many papers. What we were able to recognize is there was a new paradigm emerging, and that's called Open Innovation 2.0. And that's about transforming industries. So many efforts at transforming industry, but particularly health, have failed because actually people know how to maybe innovate in one organization, one hospital, but not system-wide. So I really thought there was an opportunity to transform the Irish healthcare system using this innovation science. And it's not really rocket science, but there are some smart things that you have to have a platform, you have to orchestrate it, you have to design for adoption, you have to industrialize the innovation process. So I set about doing that, and all of a sudden COVID came along, and that became a major opportunity. First, because it was a real need, and then secondly, because in health there are a lot of blockers. And all the blockers were either busy doing other things, or actually were too scared to come to work. And lots of people were too scared. They wouldn't come to work. So we worked with some amazing clinicians. I believe we were first in the world to have remote monitoring of COVID-19 patients. That was available in 48 hours. We worked with Eamon Costello of Patient Empower. It was deployed within 5 days, initially in the Mater in James's Hospital. That weekend, we were working with Richard Costello in Beaumont, and I believe we were first in the world with real-time respiratory monitoring of COVID patients, and we were getting 12 hours notice of a patient desaturating, whereas the rest of the world were using what we call oxygen saturation level, SpO2. Mm. You only realized you had a problem when the patient's SpO2 went below 93%. So that probably saved lives. It also stopped people being intubated, because already 12 hours in advance, you could see there was going to be a problem. We were one of the first to have telehealth. I think 16th of March, we turned it on in St. James's Hospital with Professor Aidan Corvin for mental health patients. I remember having the CIO of Zoom in my office a couple of years later, and I was thanking him. Zoom did an amazing job, as did Teams. And then I told Harry, who actually is a Trinity graduate, I said, well, here's what he said. Oh, my God, Martin, what you guys did was amazing. And we got this. I work a lot with Professor Matt Malarkey. He's in the University of South Florida, and he talks about binary adoption, and he's published research, and he's spoken at a forum I run at the UN. He calls it binary adoption. And he says, look, what we thought about digital transformation, it was really hard. It was going to require lots of capital, and there'd be lots of resistance, etc. Mm. But what we realized during COVID, we could do it out of operational funding, we could do it really quick, and it worked, and people wanted it.
Yeah.
And, you know, the adoption of by clinicians, but particularly of patients, you know, when patients were given a choice, well, we can admit you to a hospital, or we can give you this tech at home and you can stay at home and we'll know if there's a problem. I don't think we had a single patient said, I want to go into hospital.
So that's incredible innovation, and a lot of it was born out of necessity. And as you said, I love that you described COVID as an opportunity to do this, because I completely agree. What I wonder, though, is did we take the foot off the gas a little bit and let the rest of that opportunity dwindle away? Because it doesn't feel like there has been as dramatic a shift since, say, 2023 as there had been between 2020 and 2023, if you understand.
Yeah, most definitely. And one example, like e-prescribing was introduced in 2.5 weeks. And we had a couple of meetings, 5 people in my office, and 2.5 weeks later, and great credit to the Department of Health, they moved really quickly. Niall Sinnott, and we worked with the Irish Pharmacy Union and also ICGB, Fintan Foy, Dara Loughlin, also Eileen Burke. And that was done in 2.5 weeks. But when COVID went away, we've regressed.
Yeah.
And all the usual blockers came out. And Ireland is so far behind still, Jess. We are number 27 out of 27 in Europe. So I spent the last couple of days in Belfast. I have a new book out. I was able to give a copy to the health minister, Mike Nesbitt. But what the Northern Ireland have done, they've had a program called Encompass, and that has put electronic health records into all of the, you know, the hospitals up north. And they've done that in 3 or 4 years. When I joined the HSE, which is now 8-9 years ago, the procurement process started, and it still hasn't finished. But I can give you the contrast. We've been working in Maynooth with the Construction Workers Health Trust, with Alison Gilland is the CEO. We did a personal electronic health record procurement in 7 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's, I think, about 10,000 construction workers have been screened on the building sites, and they all have personal electronic health records on their phones. And one of the construction workers said, you know, they get a half an hour with a nurse who screens them using AI tools, and they get advice, and they say, well, when will I ever get, you know, even 15 minutes with a doctor? So it's wonderful. And that's an example of what we can do. We can totally transform our health systems. And there's a bunch of what I call, you know, Copernican shifts, 10 Copernican shifts. And they're as fundamental, Jess, as, you know, back in the 16th century, Copernicus said, actually, you know what, the earth revolves around the sun rather than the other way around.
Mm.
And that was really heresy. And Galileo was under house arrest. It took, you know, Copernicus's book, which was on the revolution of heavenly spheres, was banned by the Catholic Church for 150 years. And it's entirely obvious to now. But the changes that have to come are shifts like, for example, a focus on illness to wellness. So, you know, there's an issue we'll get back to in a second in terms of the resistance
yeah.
of the culture. But just to say, we the first thing is the shift from illness to wellness. In Europe, and particularly in Ireland, we're spending 97% of our health budget on illness and just 3% on wellness.
So how do we shift that? What does that mean, right? What does the shift from illness to wellness? Because nobody chooses to get ill. Everybody would like to stay well. So from a systemic point of view, how do we shift that dynamic so that the emphasis is on the wellness?
No, it's wonderful, and it's really easy, and it's way more, it's better for us as people, and it's also really good for the system. So right now, the default model of care, and Professor Anthony Staines of DCU talks about this a lot, we give care at the last possible moment in the most expensive place. So many cancers are stage 3, stage 4 in the ED department.
Mm-hmm.
But we can now empower patients, and we can take patients, like how many people, there's only 4 variables, Jess, that are, you know, if we think about what we call the Pareto effect, 4 things that can really affect our health. There are movement, our exercise, our nutrition, our sleep, and managing stress. So if we can just educate people. A simple thing, for example, it's now, you know, really important, information is after you've eaten, take a 10-minute walk. And this is so important in terms of managing your blood sugar levels. And it's just recently coming out, the evidence was there that it worked.
Mm.
But now scientists are understanding that how this works. So the first thing is to educate people, nutrition. You've got to, and I'm so delighted to see, actually, I know RFK in the US gets a lot of criticism, but he's done something really wonderful in terms of relooking at the food pyramid and inverting it. So there is, you know, nutrition, better nutrition advice. So you are what you eat, you are what you exercise. Sleep is incredibly important. And then stress is a big issue. So just take one. Ireland, it has the second highest rate of cancer in Europe. It also has the second lowest rates of survival in Europe. And that was data that Dr. Amy Nonal of the Irish Cancer Society shared yesterday in Belfast. And Professor Aideen Culhane, she talked about we have a cancer emergency, because in most developed countries, cardiovascular is the number yes. one cause of death. But in Ireland, actually, cancer is number one. But most of of the cancers, actually, in the past, a lot of people thought it was genetic or got germline, but it's mostly got somatic. So obviously, you don't choose to get cancer, but there are a lot of things we can do in terms of what we eat and exercising and sleep that will reduce the risk of cancer. And similarly, in cardiovascular, so there are common conditions. Sadly, we all know people that just died. Suddenly, I heard of a latest incident at the weekend, or a guy I played cricket with and the fittest guy in the club, and he died. And there are tools where we can now do early detection of issues, and stuff that used to have to happen in an acute hospital can now be done at home. And I know you talk a lot about AI. So just give you an example. I've been working with a company in Denmark, and Peter Sogard, he's a cardiologist over there, and they've developed an AI device that will measure your VO2 max in 3 minutes. Mm. And VO2 max is basically the maximum volume of oxygen that your body or your blood can absorb when you're exercising. But this is really important because it's turning out to be the best measure of wellness and the best measure of fitness and the best measure of longevity. And in the past, the way of measuring this accurately, you had to do a CPET test. So you had to get on an exercise bike or a treadmill. You had a mask, and it took about a half an hour. You had to get all sweaty, and that immediately excluded a lot of people from doing that. Now you lie down flat, and in 40 seconds, we do the measurement. And then in AI, and you probably know Stephen McMahon. He's the CEO of the Irish Patients Association. He's wonderful, great advocate for him. But he came out to Maynooth, and we measured it there. He just lay down, and in 3 minutes, it was done. And it gives him information. Thankfully for Stephen, he was actually, much better than the average for his percentile. But that gives us measurements. Like, can you imagine just driving your car and you don't know what speed you're driving it? You don't know how much oil is in the tank, what your brakes are like. And simple device. So I'm measuring or wearing a little ring here. Yeah. And this is reporting kind of in real time. What's my step count? What's my heart rate, etc.? And just by giving this kind of information to individuals, we can better manage our health. And one of the most important shifts, I talk about 10 shifts, there's from illness to wellness, hospital, analog to digital, but probably the most important is what we call from paternalism to partnership, or a passive patient to a participative patient, and us realizing that we actually own our own health. And I remember Colin Doherty, Professor Colin Doherty, he is the head of the Trinity Medical School, had the privilege of working him on and off, but he's an epilepsy consultant at James. I remember him presenting some data from a Swedish epilepsy patient who was saying, look, 99% of the time the patient is looking after themselves, and it's just 1% of the time. So this shift to us as individuals actually taking the most responsibility for health is so important. And Werner Slack, he was one of the original electronic health record pioneers 50 years ago. And he said the patient is the most underutilized resource in the health system. So the idea of this proactive mindset, we take responsibility for health, but through our phone or our smartwatch, we can actually see, well, did I do my 6,000 or 10,000 steps? Or even, I sometimes wear what's called a CGM, a continuous glucose monitor device, and that looks at my blood sugar level. And I was diagnosed as pre-diabetic. And by using that, changing my nutrition, doing the exercise, I'm now sort of, healthy. And I had a remarkable discovery. I live in Nace. I was going to the Nace Theatre, I think, with one or two of my daughters. And I was late, so I cycled. Mm. And I'd had dinner just before I left the house, and was maybe a 15-minute cycle. And when I got to the theatre, the Moat, excellent theatre, I looked at the monitor of my phone, and my blood sugar just sort of plummeted. And it was real evidence for me to say, gosh, if I exercise after I've eaten, it can really flatten the glucose spike. So all of these things, your blood sugar levels, your exercise, the quality of the nutrition, your sleep, they all add up.
Yeah.
And they turn into many more years of healthy life.
And actionable insights, because for years I made the point on air that, I'd get a wearable in to review and it would look really cool. It'd be nice and bright coloured, have a nice touch screen, but I didn't know what any of the data meant. I didn't know what it meant if I did 15,000 steps or 5,000 steps. I couldn't understand it. And what's happened in the last few years is the technology has not only gotten more sophisticated, but the companies know that they need to articulate this into actionable insights. So I wear the Whoop. I'm always talking Wonderful. About it on this show. And the reason I love it is because I've got an AI assistant in there. And it'll tell me, well, you slept for 8 hours and 15 minutes last night. So if your recovery is at 93%, that means you can train hard today. Or you slept for 3 hours of broken sleep, go easy today. But I know I can take action from that. And like, I don't mind sharing a few over a period of time. I was concerned about my heart health because my HRV was very low. And I was, you know, watching the trend. And because the trend was continuing in a direction, do you know what I did? I went and I booked for a screening at a cardiac clinic. Well, now, I'm completely fine.
Yeah.
But this, to me, is an example of what you're talking about. It's preventative measures. It's giving me control rather than me going to a GP saying, look, my watch is saying this, and then getting told off for believing Dr. Google, which I did get given out a number of times. But I can then take control of my own health and investigate it.
Totally, Jess. And that's all about proactiveness. And I had a meeting earlier this morning with an Irish company called Lumen Wellness.
Mm-hmm.
And they're introducing the VO2 max measurement in, but they also are working with a Swedish company in Malmo called Accurix, and they have a device that will do a CAD score, and it is using a sensor that listens to your heart and is able to detect the blood flow through your artery, so it can immediately suggest, because you have something, you have atherosclerosis, and the blood flow, it looks at the turbulence of the blood flow, is able to detect if there's a potential issue. So this could be used in two ways, just as part of a regular screen at your GP. It's very easily done.
Mm.
Or if you present at a hospital with symptoms of chest pain, they could do this immediately. And, you know, what they're showing is they can rule out 50% of the people having heart attacks. So it stops wasting resources because, very often people have to go down for an angiogram. And that's a very highly contested resource in any hospital. So these are devices that used to be in the hospital, but now can be done in the GP surgery. And another tool that, Lumen Health and Karen Kelly is the advanced nurse practitioner there, an eco stethoscope, that is an AI stethoscope. And I was convinced up until recently that the stethoscope was dead. You might be familiar with the butterfly or a V-scan, and these are very powerful devices and they change medicine. So instead of the doctor having to listen and guess what's going on, and that's what you use with a stethoscope, now you can look and see using what we call a point of care ultrasound. A doctor or a person, actually you or I, could do it with an AI tool. And we've done this, for example. Dave Burke is the cardiologist in the Beacon Hospital, and he was a pioneer in using the butterfly. But we actually did a live test when I was in the HSE. He handed the tool, to their director of oncology, Jenny, and she took the risk. And using the AI guidance, she was able to do an echo test on Dave, flawlessly. So in the past, in some parts of Ireland, there's an 18-month waiting list for the echo test. Now it can be done in the GP surgery. I was with the NHS in Manchester about 2 months ago, Amar Ahmed, and you might know Fari Ahmed. She's the BBC doctor when there's a health, she's called on. But Amar did my echo test again in 3 minutes.
Mm.
And I don't have an 18-month waiting list.
But so the waiting list is one thing, access to the technology, because, the Apple Watch is phenomenal. The capabilities of it is phenomenal, but it's also at least £600. So that's not accessible to everyone. That's point number one. But if this technology has the potential to be so transformational, why isn't it the norm? This is the point where I get frustrated, because I have seen, at the summer school in Maynooth, at myriad different events, and even at Apple's own press launches and all the rest, I have seen the incredible life-saving stories that devices that cost 600 quid could have, the insights. Why aren't they prescribed? Why, if you go in with concerns, are you not given a tracker of some description? And that information then being fed, analysed and taken seriously, because I still get the odd time from people in the medical community, look, don't be trusting that now too much, or that's not the be all and end all, or maybe there's a glitch.
Well, it's really, it's a leadership issue and it's also an inertia issue, trying to, like, the HSE is like a super tanker and trying to get change. But, you know, one of the things I did when I was in the HSE was introduce an AI screening for pharmacies. And we started this, we launched it actually with Minister Robert Troy and CarePlus. We had 11 companies working on it. It was terrific. We had an amazing ED consultant from Castlebar, Anne Short. Her company, Full Health Medical, were, well, and we saw, even with our proof of concept, 30 people, we saw amazing results. But at the end of that, the idea was you could go to your pharmacy and in 20 minutes, you could have a full health check. But not only that, you would leave with a device, and we work with Fitbit, so relatively low cost Fitbit device. And we also gave people a personal electronic health record on their phone. And the price of the electronic personal would be just the price of a couple of copies per year. But sadly, that was blocked.
Why?
Not by clinicians, but by the HSE strategy division, that because it beats me, but a lot of it is not invented here. And no, I write in the book about, you know, the history of medicine. There is always resistance to change. But this was such a really good idea. It was wonderful for the patients. Like, Jess, you have to bring your car for an NCT. You know, why don't we offer the ability for every person in Ireland potentially go to a pharmacy, have this test, and you walk out with, you know, armed with information that empower you with your health. So to me, if there was one thing we could do in Ireland, this should be introduced overnight, and it would save, you know, I talk about the idea of 10x, or, you know, 10 times. If we can detect a cardiovascular issue or a respiratory issue early on, we can then deal with it, and massively reduces the cost in the long term. But also, you and I, we have a much healthier life. So it's down, I talk about three things, capability, courage and confidence. So first, we need to have the capability in place, and we do. Ireland's a real hotbed of innovation. You know, together with Leo Clancy of Enterprise Ireland, 2 or 3 years ago at the UN Digital Health Symposium, we announced what are called the first 25 Irish digital health companies that were now working with the HSE that hadn't been working with them 2 years ago. And they are, you know, exporting globally, but they find it really hard to get adoption. The second, this takes a little bit of courage, you know. In public, you might have heard the expression, nobody ever got fired for buying IBM. So it takes a little bit of courage. But we actually have a methodology. It's called Open Innovation 2.0 Living Labs. You start small. You don't write a 100-page spec and spend, you know, millions. You start with one patient. So we're doing this, for example, in the Royal Hospital in Donnybrook, working with a fantastic team, working with stroke patients and getting them home early. So they can continue their rehab at home. It also frees up beds for patients that are more acutely sick. And it turns out, for example, the nurses and doctors have better data now on the patients in their home than they have in somebody who's in a bed, you know, 2 meters from the nurse's station. But this is working. But we've used this living lab. But see, start with one patient, you know, and you get it to work and you get improvement suggestions from the clinicians. And we've just turned, you know, 5 patients have now gone home. And this should be soon. We'll have a proof of concept of 10 patients. We'll analyze and produce some recommendations. But if we're to rely on the HSE, that's not going to be scaled. And it should be. So what we need to do is, you know, set up. And I had hoped to try to do this, set up a digital health organization in the HSE that would fast track these kind of innovations. And then it's about confidence and inspiring. And we've done another wonderful project with Professor Sean Gain, sponsored by J&J and Research Ireland in the matter. So PAH patients, pulmonary arterial hypertension patients, what we've been able to do with them is actually co-design an app for them that gives them much better education. But they're also able to put in their symptoms And they're also able to, you know, do some quick questionnaires, which will give them an assessment of their, you know, wellness. And at our last summer school, Breed, one of the patients, actually spoke about how this is changing her life. And she said in the past, with the slightest thing, she would have been straight into the matter looking for care. But now, because she is empowered to manage her own health, she say, oh, a score went down. Well, that's maybe because I did a little bit too much exercise.
Yeah.
Yes, I'll just scale back. So it's about empowering. And then also Sean Gain and his team and his wonderful lead nurse there, Denise, they can now look at a dashboard of all the patients and they can see who's doing well, who's not doing. And they decide, well, okay, well, let's call Jess in because we've noticed her breathlessness has worsened over the last week. So this works for everybody, but we're now at the point, you know, we've 45 patients using it. They all love it. So how do we go scale that? And there does not appear to be the capability in the HSC to, you know, fund this or even want to do it. And despite having some great people, and we have some really good people in the HSC, but it's not systemly or architected to take these innovations, which are only going to come much faster and they're going to be transformative.
Yeah, and I think it's incredible to hear what is possible, and it's fantastic to hear the fact that this work is even being investigated and looked at and tested in this country. It's remarkable, and we should be very proud of that. But I think if you have a loved one in this country at the moment who is unwell or engaging in the services of the health system, you would probably offer a kidney to try and enhance the health service in some way, even if it's freeing up one extra bed or doing whatever it is to make sure that paperwork isn't mixed up and all of that sort of stuff. So it's very frustrating to hear the potential versus the lack of capability to make this the norm.
And we have, you know, such amazing clinicians. They're so passionate and they're dedicated. You know, when I was working in the HSC, I stood with them. I could see how dedicated they were. But also how frustrated, you know, this analogy mightn't work, but it's like our farmers that were using, you know, hand plows and horse plows rather than the tractors that are available. And many of our clinicians train internationally in American, Australian, UK hospitals where these tools are commonplace. And health isn't easy anywhere, but it seems to be a lot easier in those countries and they adopt the tools. But just the opportunity is for us to leapfrog because we are so far behind, but technology has moved ahead so fast. So at last year's summer school, we did something called the MOAD, the Mother of All Demos for Health. And this was modeled on something that Doug Engelbart did in 1968. So he was a Stanford professor. And for the very first time, he presented, well, here's a PC, here's a word processor, here's a video conference. Here's the first use of the internet, which was called then the ARPANET, and that became the vision, and it's all come true, and the technology we use is commonplace. You know, it's been in place now 20, 25 years. So what we tried to do in Maynooth, we brought 16 companies together, and we built the future of the health system, and it's working, and amazingly, we work with Maxine Radcliffe in the HSC.
Yes.
20,000 patients are using what we call a SPINE, Secure Patient Information Network Exchange. And patients with really complex needs, way more complex than you or I. These are the homeless, the Roma, the international protection applicants. And many of these patients might have 200 or 300 interactions with the health system in 20 different locations. Some of them are at the side of the road. But the beauty is all of these solutions or all of their data is there, all their medications. So if they see somebody for the first time, they can immediately see what the history was. And Miriam Staunton, I know if you know her, she is the chair of UCAN. She spoke in Belfast yesterday, and she is a stage 4 cancer survivor. And she's become an amazing advocate for empowering patients with information. And she says, you know, having the patient as the source, the primary source of information, is not only inefficient, but it's also unsafe. And one of the issues we have in Ireland, I think this could be the way we get it. Ireland is not compliant with GDPR. So Miriam told the story. I think it's Article 15 of GDPR. The data subject, which would be you or I, within 30 days should be provided with their information when they're Miriam quoted yesterday, it takes 10 weeks. There was a brilliant article in the Irish Examiner Christmas Eve last year talking about cancer patients with terminal diagnosis having to submit freedom of information requests to get the record. So right now, this is the way, like I've tried everything I can think of because we actually can build the world's best digital health system. And we've proven it. And we're working with amazing GPs and we that's, you know, Hanover Medical. They've 30,000 patients on their, they're using AI annotation. We work with Tonson Health and James Doyle in, you know, who would think in Bunclody, 55,000 older people are living safely in their homes, remotely monitored from Bunclody. And one care worker actually can manage 660 people.
Wow.
Whereas when you're in a hospital, it's one nurse to four or six people. So a huge issue is productivity. So productivity has gone down. To use an economic term, we can say that the marginal efficiency of capital in healthcare is approaching zero. So just to use the Ireland data, and there was a great report from Department of Health, and it was an economics innovation. But what it showed over the last 8 years, we've added $8 billion in spending on a baseline of $14 billion. We've added 50,000 health workers on a baseline of 80,000 workers, but the output has only gone up 3.8%. So it's the idea of just, we're just fattening the caterpillar. It's just getting fatter and fatter. But the opportunity is that we could create this butterfly. This new health system and the technology is here where the health system revolves around us and our phones rather than the hospitals. And we're actually, our phones, we actually control the data with assistance if we want it. And it's entirely, entirely possible. And we just actually need to make a decision to do it. But whether, I think we have the capability, certainly outside of the system, do we have the courage? I have to say, I'm hopeful Jennifer Carl McNeill does want to drive change. And she needs to be told a story. I've had a brief conversation with her. I know Minister James Lawless gets it. He attended her summer school. He sent me a message afterwards, Martin. That was extremely impressive. But it just, you know, there's a choice there. Let's buy decades-old American technology to put us where the rest of the world was 15 years ago, or we can actually build this ourselves and we can create lots of jobs, lots of exports, and we can save many lives and extend lives. Because I've worked in many industries, in automotive and energy, but it was never life-threatening or life-saving. But this is the one industry, if we do it right, our lives can be extended and our loved ones can live longer.
It seems like a no-brainer. And like, obviously, we would love to chat with the minister. She's more than welcome to come on this show or any show. And if there is anything that we can do to facilitate or to investigate or to highlight some of the other great work that's being done around the country, because this is life or death and it's quality of life and it's about empowering people. And I do think we, like the work that you've been doing for such a long time has made a huge difference. And I just hope that in the next few years, we see some of this great work becoming the norm and that the system does change. We are up against the clock, unfortunately, but I want to talk about your book. You've given me a copy of your book. This, the title of the book is a phrase that I have heard you say so many times over the year: stay left, shift left, 10x. You alluded to it there a few times throughout the piece, but if and when people go and buy the book, what are they going to get from it? And is this for medical professionals or is it for people like me who are passionate, curious and eager to see change in our health system?
Well, it's really for everybody because there's lots of case studies for individuals. How can you improve your own health? It's for clinicians. It's for policymakers. It's for tech entrepreneurs. And just to explain the core concept, we're trying to make healthcare innovation really simple and get everybody going in the same direction. And what I propose is what we call a new theory of the business for health. And I was really pleased. I was approached by the British Medical Journal to write a paper on this, and they're, you know, actively promoting it. But stay left, it's not political. Stay left is about first we focus on keeping people well. And then if you have a chronic disease like diabetes or you need rehab, we can do that best of all from home. Shift left is about getting you home as quickly as possible if you do end up in hospital. And then 10x the notion that we can do things 10 times better, 10 times cheaper, 10 times faster. And just digital is democratizing healthcare innovation. You and I now can instantaneously find and have that curated by an AI agent in a matter of seconds, information that previously wasn't available to us. So we're being empowered. But I had the privilege of doing a speaking tour across 11 cities in Asia, and Australia, and New Zealand. But I'll just tell the first story. I gave a talk in Indonesia, in Jakarta. And it just went the first day when I arrived there by taxi. I saw these big billboards with my picture up on them. And the event went really well. But the the rector of Yarzi University was also speaking. But he heard what I had to say, and he arranged a meeting that evening at 7:30 at the Yarzi University with all the executive staff. We spent an hour and a half, you know, working this, and he's agreed to adopt this book as part of their medical school. So they graduate 600 doctors a year, and that was a real significant, okay, this is absolutely landing. And there's a lot of clinicians that are thinking the same. I'm not the only person that's thinking this. We have an annual UN Digital Health Symposium, and 50 or 60 people from all over the world come together. But if I give a practical example, I was in Melbourne, and they have the world's largest virtual ED. So, you know, your listeners in Ireland will be familiar with going to the ED, and it's chaos, and you could have to wait 6 or 12 hours despite the best efforts of the staff who are working heroically. But in Melbourne, they are treating hundreds and hundreds of thousands of patients using a virtual ED. And when the ambulance goes out, the first point of call is to actually call the ED. And what they found is that 80% of the patients actually don't have to physically go to the ED. So we're able to resolve it. And this is so easy, Dawn. And there's a company in the UK, OptoHealth, and their promise is that the triage time goes from an average of 4 hours to 4 minutes using this solution. And I spent time in the ED, and I used to volunteer in the Meath Hospital many years ago when I was with the Ordramalt, and it was absolute chaos. And I was in the virtual ED with the team there, and the clinician Lauren Scher, who invented it. I've never been in a more chilled place, and there are clinicians in booths, you know, responding as the demand comes in, and everybody would want that. Rather, you and I've had my experience of going to various EDs and waiting and seeing the chaos, and it's bad for everybody. But imagine being able to do that remotely, and also a way, if there's an urgent issue, you get put to the top of the list and you get brought to the hospital. So it's entirely, so it needs just imagination. The technology is there. So it's the capability. I think we have the capability, but it is now the courage and the confidence to do it. And the confidence using this living lab approach, let's not do something for 5 million people. Let's do it for one patient, then do it for 10, then do it for 500, then you get to 10,000, and then you can scale it. And procurement is often cited as a problem, and it is, but there are now they're over a decade old, EU innovative procurement instruments that make it possible to procure solutions like this rather than having to write, you know, very big specifications and go through a labored process. So I think there's a lot of hope, but it just takes the courage and the decision. And a key reason I moved from the HSE to Maynooth is I came across an academic paper from Politecnico di Milano saying the type of change that I was hoping we could achieve in Ireland is best driven from an academic environment, because it's seen as academic, it's seen as independent. So what we've been building, and Jess, your listeners may not have heard the term guided open collaborative ecosystems, but the Politecnico of Milano talk about that as a fundamental disruption in the business competitive landscape. And Deming, who is the father of quality, he was already talking about 50 years ago. He said, you know, we've learned that competition is destructive. What if we were all just working towards a common goal and we want to win for everybody? And that's the idea. We have a shared vision and we come together with shared values. So what we are hoping, what we've built with the HSE and with Maynooth University is the spine, and certainly our physical spines that keep us together. If we didn't have our spines, we'd just collapse the ground. We have built this digital spine for the country. Is it perfect? No, but it is what we call a minimal viable product. And it's working already for 20,000 people. And we've been able to show, for example, with Tunstall Health, a person that falls, they have a watch falls is a massive issue. Yes. Costs us €1 billion. And sadly, if you the longer you wait to detect somebody, the risk of mortality. But now what we demonstrated, I fell, I demonstrated it. I got a call through my watch from Bunk Lodi, and the care system was able to say, hey, Martin, you've fallen. I can see your electronic health record. I can see that your doctor changed your blood pressure medication there 2 days ago. And then you can decide. And if I didn't respond, they actually have my GPS coordinates and they can send an ambulance. And that has worked for real. So we actually have all the elements, and people like Frank Kenny is desperately frustrated. He's built his own GP system. I use them. I was in Brisbane and I picked up Ballybelly. It's the same thing Hugo Keenan picked up, and I lost a bunch of weight. And we had a remote call. And by the time the call was finished, actually, his analysis and the patient notes were on my phone in Brisbane. So it's entirely possible. We just need to scale it. And we can do it as a Guaranteed Ireland solution. Of the 16 companies that put together this, what we call the mother of all, only one was an Orion-based company. Now, it was led by a very illustrious guy, Chuck House. You might have heard of him, but he was the guy that figured out how to get Neil Armstrong's video from the moon, TV signals. And he's part of it. He's built a digital health observatory technology. And we're delighted Chuck has joined us as a senior innovation fellow at Maynooth University. And he's going to be working with us on these digital health observatory technology. So it's entirely possible, but it's about leadership and we just need to make decisions. So why don't we see if we can get the minister? I think I've seen the minister speak. She's very passionate. She's very smart. Let's get her in here. Let's have the discussion. And this is just about decision and doing it. It does not cost a lot of money. Like, the projections are that we're going to spend $1 billion, $2 billion on American EHR technology. We can do it for a fraction of cost in Ireland with a far better capability. Right now, this morning, I was reading about there's Texas. Texas and one of the biggest Epic, there's a big issue around every time a doctor makes a call to find out patient information, they actually have to pay Epic. So there's a charge by what's called an API, application programming interface.
Mm.
But they don't own the data. Data is owned by the patient, and indeed it's co-produced by the doctor. So why would we go down that route? And I don't want to single out a particular vendor, but we can actually build a solution that's 10 times better, 100 times better, you know, gives us control. We co-produce, and we've actually shown it working. It's not as if it's theory. There are real-time, you know, 20,000 patients in Hanover Clinic using this solution. In Bunk Lodi, there's 55,000 people in vital signs automation. We might have talked before about Aoife Johnson, which is so tragic, but there's a Galway-based company, Syncrify. They already have that solution now. It's in 11 hospitals. It needs to be out everywhere in the country. But we also demonstrated during the MOAD, David Toohey, he's the CEO, he took my vital signs and literally then computed what's called the early warning score. But instantaneously, we showed that data being sent to the spine. And we now have the possibility of an AI agent looking at that and can detect sepsis before the nurse on the ward can detect it. We can start to see the deterioration. So it's so possible. In fact,
all the elements are there.
It's not just possible. It's so necessary because we don't do this. Our systems are going to break down. Yep. Unfortunately, there are people die because... And not because we've got some amazing conditions, but they are so hampered by the tools. You know, can you imagine doing your job without the laptop? But today, most of our doctors and nurses in hospitals are still writing paper notes. I certainly couldn't work.
No.
You know, and sending letters. And so We just need to get on with it.
Okay, I feel more hopeful now. We are going to try and get Minister for Health, Jennifer Carwin McNeill, in studio. We will have conversations, we will ask the questions and hopefully get answers. If you want to hear more from Martin, and I think you always should, you can get the new book. It is Stay Left, Shift Left, 10X, Martin Curley. It's always a joy to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining me here on News Talk.
Great, and thanks for your great work helping evangelise this message.